On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with Steve Miller, author of Near-Death Experiences as Evidence for the Existence of God and Heaven.
This NDE science, doesn't it really contradict a Christian worldview, an idea that Jesus is the only way, an idea that these are the sacred books that tell us how heaven is, how the afterlife is? I mean, it contradicts that, right?
Well, I don't see that. I think it's commonly held that it does contradict, and many people believe that it does. I think that certain niche NDEs would certainly contradict certain traditional teachings of Christianity, like having past lives or whatever.
If you accept near-death experience science, I don't know how you get past the reality of past lives. I mean, it's all over the place. It's not like these NDEers are coming back and saying, oh, the idea of reincarnation has been falsified by my experience.
I would say that it's rather a fringe experience just because of my research, and I've not researched it comprehensively in this area.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, Steve Miller joins me to talk about his excellent new book on near-death experience science. And in particular, here's the part I was most interested in, and Steve obliged me with this dialogue, is the connection between near-death experience research, science, and the Christian experience, or Christian doctrine, as it's practiced by most people around the world. It's a dialogue that I really wanted to have and have tried to have with several different guests, but Steve was willing to step up and really engage in that kind of discussion, and I appreciate him doing so. Here's my dialogue with Steve Miller. Today we welcome Steve Miller to Skeptico. Steve is a professional writer, speaker, and educator, and he's here to talk about his latest book, Near-Death Experiences as Evidence for the Existence of God and Heaven, a brief introduction in plain language. Steve, welcome to Skeptico, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, your book is, I think, as advertised in the title. It has a very nice overview of the near-death experience field. It's written in plain language, but that's not to say it's lightweight in any way. It has a lot of references to serious NDE research. So in that respect, it is a great primer for people. You also have glowing reviews on Amazon. People seem to really like the book. And as well as that, you have a very nice foreword from Jeff Long. So congratulations on a nice book. Tell us first, who did you write this book for?
I wrote it for people in general who are interested in near-death experiences. Maybe they've had their own near-death experience in a traffic accident or open-heart surgery, or maybe someone has read Heaven is for Real or Evidence for Heaven or one of these very popular books about someone's personal experience, but they're saying, well, yeah, well, that's cool, but do I trust this person? And, you know, is this, you know, I'm basing it on this. I mean, these popular books tend to be based on one person's experience. And is this really evidential at all? Or is it just one person's word against another? So I wanted to take people a step further once they read one of these other books and say, what does the evidence say from the research that's actually gone on over the past 35 years? Because I find that typically people are totally unaware of that. They think this is just something where people are sharing their personal experiences, and they say, hey, it's one person's word against the other. There's no evidence here at all. So what does the research say?
Well, I think you're right. I think there is that gap in the knowledge out there among the general public. And I think we can see it in the popularity of some of the books that have come along. I mean, I'm always surprised that people are surprised. I'm surprised that they're surprised in a way, because obviously on this show, we've dug into this so much. So, but let me turn this slightly, because we've had a really nice email correspondence about this interview. And I pushed back pretty hard because I said, you know, gee, Steve, you got a nice book about near-death experience here, but the stuff that really interests me on Skeptico is, I think, the stuff that happens after we accept the mountain of evidence that you provide in your book. And I always think of it as the how can this be question, you know, because that was my personal experience. When I ran across this evidence, like you present in your book, my first question was, wait a minute, how can this be? I mean, this sits in a very uncomfortable place, if you will, this assertion that there is this body of scientific research that suggests that consciousness survives after our death. It sits in an uncomfortable place because on one hand, it goes against science. And on the other hand, it does challenge a lot of the religious doctrine that we normally accept. What are your thoughts on maybe in general this how can this be question, I think, that a lot of people have? And then secondly, where do you think this NDE research does sit? Where does it position itself in this culture war nonsense that we keep running up against between science and religion?
Well, you've asked several questions, so come back to me if I've missed one of them. But okay. But I would say the priority of the paradigm explains a lot. I mean, one of the best books I ever read was The Structure of Scientific Revolutions by Kuhn. And I would recommend for everyone to read that who's interested at all in controversial subjects of a scientific nature. Because we tend to think of science as being something where this totally objective scientist sits in a lab and whatever happens, whether it agrees or disagrees with his current theory, he just accepts it as this totally objective person. But the history of science would show this is not the case. I mean, look at how hard it was for Einstein's theory to be accepted. And you had people from the top universities in the world saying this is ridiculous. And it took years for people to come around. Quantum physics is even worse. I mean, Einstein, he was objective enough to find something new. But when it came to accepting quantum physics, he resisted it his entire life. He didn't want the universe to be that way. He was a determinist. He thought it was very important for science to be able to say everything is totally determined by past circumstances. And quantum physics went against that, and he was uncomfortable. So people get into their paradigm, their way of thinking about things. And for the last century or so, especially, naturalism has kind of had a hold on a lot of scientists. Many of them simply think that things that are supernatural, if they happen, there's no real evidence that they happen, and they're just uncomfortable thinking like that. And from my experience, when I talk to people who hold different paradigms than my own, and listen, I'm subject to the paradigm like anyone else. We all have to fight it. But when I'm talking to someone who's a naturalist, they just look through my book and check off each paragraph and say they find a reason not to believe that. Well, the researcher was probably a closet theist trying to make it. Well, there's no evidence that he was a theist. There's no evidence. He's saying that he didn't even believe in God in heaven before this. And now, oh, yeah, well, but there's no evidence for that. And they'll just keep coming back because they look at the world through their rose-colored glasses, and that's all they can see. So to me, that's the biggest issue. It's not the evidence. The data is there. People either ignore the data or they reinterpret it in the light of their paradigm.
Hey, I'm with you. I mean, we're totally on the same page about that. And I know you've listened to several Skeptico shows, so you know that's kind of my mantra. I mean, I started this thing saying, gee, this is no problem. We can get a handle on this. It's about the data. Let's dig into the data. And wherever the data falls, that's where we'll follow. And that was my own thought, my own orientation. And then I got into it and I said, gee, it's not about the data. It's about everything else. It's about social pressures. It's about preconceived notions, and it's about all that. So I'm with you on all that, but let me kind of push one step further because you're a Christian and you bring a Christian sensibility to this book, and that's great. But I have to tell you, and again, if you've listened to Skeptico, or maybe I should say if someone's listened to a lot of Skeptico, then they know that I've tried to approach this question of what NDEs mean to people who have a Christian worldview. And I've approached that a couple of times. I spoke with Gary Habermas, somebody who I really like and respect, a very highly regarded teacher and author of more than 30 books, Christian apologist kind of stuff. I also talked to Michael Heiser, scholar, biblical scholar, Near East Studies scholar. And it seems like I always come to the same point, and I never am able to pin anyone down. I say, look, doesn't this NDE stuff, this NDE science, doesn't it really contradict a Christian worldview, an idea that Jesus is the only way, an idea that these are the sacred books that tell us how heaven is, how the afterlife is? I mean, it contradicts that, right?
Well, I don't see that. I think it's commonly held that it does contradict, and many people believe that it does. I think that certain niche NDEs would certainly contradict certain traditional teachings of Christianity, like having past lives or whatever. And some people will come back from an NDE saying that I experienced something from a past life.
Let me interject there and kind of pin that down. That's not a core part of the near-death experience, but it's certainly pretty close to a core part of the near-death experience. I mean, that isn't just a fringe thing. And like, that's what I get like from Gary Habermas, if you remember that interview. It's like a lot of dancing around like, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there, but we don't know for sure. Hey, if you accept near-death experience science, I don't know how you get past the reality of past lives. I mean, it's all over the place. It's not like these NDEers are coming back and saying, oh, the idea of reincarnation has been falsified by my experience. I've never read a single near-death experience account that says that. And on the other hand, I've read scores and scores of them that just either assume it or directly say that multiple lives reincarnation is a reality.
Well, I would say that it's rather a fringe experience just because of my research, and I've not researched it comprehensively in this area. But looking at, I took Dr. Long's NDERF site where people are sharing their experiences, and you have a tremendous amount of them there. And so I went through carefully about 100 experiences back to back. In other words, I wasn't cherry picking. I was just going one after another after another. And within 100 experiences, I don't believe I saw any where a person referred to a past life. Now, I guarantee you, if I go far enough on his site, I'll see some that have that. But my question is, it's not how many of those. You could probably line up scores of experiences and show me and say, hey, here are all the people who talk about past lives. But the percentage of them, to me, is very small. It's like Dr. Moody would say, some people talk about prophecies of the future, that they went to the other side and they told them about the future, and then they'll say something when they come back about this is a future event and it may happen or may not. But he would say that's kind of a fringe thing. It happens every now and then. And of course, occasionally somebody will come back talking about visiting with a relative who is not deceased on the other side. Those do happen. You might could line up a good many of them. But I just didn't see it that much in my research, so that I would say that that's one of those things that sometimes happens. I just tended to stay in my research with the main body of what is happening and what it looks like is 95% of the cases. And I realized that sometimes people may come back with a false memory, or people may have reasons for saying things. Sometimes it's legitimate. Sometimes people in a very distraught state are going back and forth between some kind of a delusional experience and a near-death experience. So I just kind of stayed with what I saw as the 95% of what happens in this experience, and I stuck with that. So I didn't really go off into the others and spend much time there. Even distressing near-death experiences, very common, but I didn't go there.
Well, I don't think they are very common, and I understand where you're going, but I think that that's also problematic, because at the end of the day, we don't understand what the near-death experience is. We don't understand what this other realm is. The implications are clear about what it is, but when we start digging into the content, the way that you are, the content of these experiences, it becomes very problematic. So I'm okay with not going there. I'm a little bit not as okay in saying, well, we can therefore look for these larger patterns, because as I just said, I think the larger pattern is clear that reincarnation is a part of it. You don't see it that way. And then we'd have some content analysis debate.
Let me say this, though, in that regard, some people think of Christians as having a very tight theology and we kind of know what's going to happen with everything. And to me, the Apostle Paul said that we see in a mirror darkly, but then we will see face to face. I'm fully aware that one day when I go to the other side, I'll be corrected about a lot of the things that I believe. You know, maybe some of the things that I thought about past lives are actually just nonsense and were never clearly taught in the scripture as I thought they were. So I'm kind of open to the data out there. I'm still looking, I'm still searching and trying to keep an open mind as well.
Fair enough. And we should all keep an open mind. But I want to come back to this point, and because it's really the point that interests me most about this thing, and that's that, does the body of the near-death experience research, does it contradict Christian doctrine? And it just does. I mean, you mentioned Jeff Long, who wrote a nice forward introduction to your book. He's been on this show a couple times. I asked him the question directly, based on his research. Does this experience support the idea of the primacy of Christianity? Because that is a claim of Christianity. Christianity doesn't claim, oh, I'm one of many paths to this higher consciousness, to God, however we want to understand it. That's not the Christian claim. The Christian claim is, this is the path, this is the way, this is superior in some way. Even if you're an open-minded, most liberal Christian, you say, hey, there might be other paths, this and that. One, I don't see how you can really get that out of the scripture, number one. But number two, even if you say that, I don't think it's really the mainstream view among Christians. So given that people like Jeff Long and every near-death experience researcher I've talked to says that the science, the evidence we get back from near-death experience does not support the primacy of Christianity, then what does someone do with that if you have a Christian worldview?
Well, first of all, I disagree with your statement that virtually all of them don't support the...
Who does? Who supports?
Sabom did strong research on it just after Moody. He wrote several books on it. He did two different very good studies, also taught at Emory University, and very respected researcher, and he became more evangelical in his Christian faith. He was kind of a moderate sort of Christian when he started, and then he saw the experience, and he said, wow, there's another side. And as time went on, he became like an elder in his church and came to support more traditional doctrine. So I would say there are those there. Now, I think that...
There are those there that what? See, because, Steve, I can see how someone could have this experience or be exposed to this material and then say, therefore, I am going to choose this religious life. I am going to express my spirituality in this way. I can understand that. What I don't see, and I don't know, I know a little, I know that Saban is a Christian and he has that belief system, but I don't know how you get from the evidence to that. The evidence just doesn't support that. I don't know who you can really say who's pointing to the evidence and says, because of the evidence, I think that leads to a Christian worldview, or I think it supports the primacy of Christianity. I don't see that anywhere.
Well, that's why I had one full chapter comparing many of the things that we learned from near-death experiences to Christianity. Now, I think that you're a little bit wrong-headed, in my opinion, in saying that somebody's going to have this experience and then conclude Jesus is the way to God and all these central Christian truths. I don't see that. I see it as more like natural theology, where somebody looks up in the stars and the heavens and the complexity of cells and says, hey, this didn't get here by itself by naturalistic means, somehow there's got to be something greater up there, I think, beyond us. So to me, when I look at a near-death experience, it could be consistent with several different religions. It's not pointing to exclusively one. It could be consistent with many religions, but it at least gets us past naturalism. It gets us to saying there's something on the other side that's significant. There's more to life. And these people have these life reviews. It tells us something about what's important with life, about life. Hey, it could have been anything. But what he says is the primacy of love, of caring for those around us. These are the important things. Hey, you look to the scriptures. What does Jesus say is the most important thing? You know, love your neighbor as yourself. And there's so many things that are consistent with it. But no, I don't think it's pointing exclusively to Christianity, as in someone has this experience and says, oh, well, now I know that God's true. Now, let me tell you a little something about my theology as to why. I think you're assuming that if Christianity were true, that they would go to the other side, God would introduce them to Jesus and say, listen, here's the one you need to follow. Here's how to get saved, and you go back and get your life together. But everything I see in the scripture says that that's just not God's mode of operation, is just giving everyone this whole ball of theology himself. It was always given to the disciples to do that, for people to spread the message. I don't know why he does that, but that seems to be his method of operation. When the Apostle Paul had a vision in the book of Acts, he didn't have a vision of the whole Jesus thing or how to get saved. He was told to go to another person, and that person and people within the church gave him the further steps. So if I'd never heard of an NDE and someone said, okay, if a person who is a non-believer went to be before God, what would God tell him? I would not expect for him to go into all this detail. To me, again, it's just like natural theology. He wants to get you to search, seek, and ye shall find, and he wants that person to go back and search. But you're right. It doesn't point exclusively to Christianity, and I wouldn't expect it to.
Okay, and just to be clear, because I've spoken about this many times, I totally agree with the first part of what you said. I think we are on solid ground when we say that the near-death experience, one, falsifies this craziness that we find ourselves in, this atheistic, materialistic craziness that tells you that you are just your brain. You are a biological robot. That's nuts, and we need to firmly stand up and say that. I think your book does that. I think the evidence that you bring forward does that, and I'm very comfortable saying that. I'm also comfortable moving from there and saying, okay, if we're willing to accept this data, this body of evidence, then what are we willing to accept in terms of the content of the message? And I'm totally in agreement with you. The content of the message, and this is often overlooked by, it's not overlooked, but it's downplayed by some near-death experience researchers because it challenges our spiritual sensibilities, and we like to kind of play it clean and not get too woo-woo with it. And that's that it's about love, right? It's about caring for other people. It's not about promoting yourself or any of your big accomplishments. It's about the smile you gave that person. It's helping someone who needed it. It's true charity. It's the unselfish acts we do. That comes through loud and clear. I stand on that from this near-death experience research as you do and say that that's true. I just think we're getting crossways a little bit, Steve, in terms of when we say, what does that mean? Because the other part of this, how can this be question is, how can this not be in my church? How can this not be in my Christian doctrine? How can this not be in my scripture that I think is such an important part of my spiritual experience? So I look at it as not like the near-death experience research precludes my belief in Christian faith or Christian spirituality, because I'm a big tent guy when I come to that. I just look at the evidence for Christianity and say, hey, there's plenty of people that seem to have this Christian experience, and it seems to lead to all these things that are positive and are in line with what this near-death experience research is telling us. They do seem more loving. Hey, they do seem to be more less materialistic and more in tune with that. I think that's strong evidence for something real happening in their Christian experience. But I have to draw the line there and say, I'm also kind of really a stickler about connecting these things logically and rationally. And when I do that, I say there are problems that we have to admit that we've been kind of led down this path in terms of Christianity and the way it's practiced in the United States, the way it's practiced in the world, in terms of that doctrine, that dogma, and what we're finding from the near-death experience research. So I don't know. I don't know if that helps you understand where I'm coming from, but I'm not against someone having a Christian experience and becoming more spiritual or that affecting their life. I think there's a reality to that. I don't only have a problem with that. I think that's a reality. I just don't think it connects with the science in the way that maybe you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think it disconnects. I just don't think if you're only looking at near-death experiences as your only piece of evidence, I don't get all the way to Christianity. I get to God, I get to love, I get to saying there are beings on the other side, there's more to this world than meets the eye. Many things that are very important that I get to through near-death experiences, but I don't get all the way. It's just one line of the evidence. Now, to me personally, what brings me all the way over to Christianity tends to be other types of evidence, like the historical evidence concerning the scriptures, things like, and I mean, these are things that we don't need to get into because they're really off the point, but there's a cumulative case for me that goes beyond near-death experiences that I bring in. So the near-death experiences don't get me all the way there. But let me bring us back to one other thing. And I know that you've been through all these interviews and you've got excellent, I would encourage any listener, if this is your first one to listen to, go in and listen to these other interviews. Alex has collected some tremendous interviews here from many different perspectives. But for so many of the listeners, they're nowhere near where Alex is in his comprehension of this data that we're talking about of the last 35 years. I was totally shocked after I read Heaven is for Real. And I said, well, this is an interesting, heart-touching story, but there's no real evidence there. And then one of the people who wrote a blurb for that book said that they had studied the research, or they were researching near-death experiences, and that this was consistent with their research. And I thought, who's researching this stuff? Now, I had heard of Moody's book from back in 1975, but I never read it because I thought, this is just people's personal opinions. What is this? So I begin to get into the research and find out that over 900 articles on near-death experiences were published in scholarly material literature prior to 2005. It's been in journals such as Psychiatry, The Lancet, Critical Care Quarterly, the Journal for Near-Death Experiences. There's an entire journal that's set up for this. The journal has articles pro and against by naturalists, by theists, Neurology Journal. In the past 30-year period after Moody published Life After Life, 55 researchers or teams published at least 65 studies of over 3,500 NDEs. Now, the reason I bring that up, and that's old school to you, Alex, you know all this, but when I put something on a website or I make some argument concerning near-death experiences, what I see is the vast majority of people who are against them come back with responses that show they have no clue about what the data is. They're not even arguing about the data. They've not read Sebohm. They've not read Moody. They've not read these people. They've read an article on an atheist site about it, and now they think they're experts. But we've got to somehow get back into this because this is serious. I mean, if life is more than meets the eye, if naturalism in our brain is not all it is, we need to get in tune with it. And we may disagree on some specifics of Christianity or New Age interpretations, But this is important stuff, and people need to get into the evidence and take a little more time with it. And that's where I'm trying to lead people with my book and to say, here's you an introduction, and here's some other books you can read, positive and negative, to get at the evidence, because that's what I see people not doing today.
And you do a really nice job of that, Steve. As we said before, it's, you know, it's not a long book. You can jump right into it, but you break it down in a way that's understandable, but you still keep it rich with the references to the data, like you just mentioned. So all that, I think, is to your credit. I think this process is important. And I think us talking about this in the way that you just did, in terms of being a personal kind of thing that you have to, you know, you didn't know, and then you knew, and then you had to dig deeper. I mean, I think it lets other people know that, you know, how, what you have to go through if you want to get to that other side of knowing.
Well, when I was in high school is when I started getting serious about my personal faith, but I continually went through personal doubts about, am I on the right track? Am I not? And so a lot of my formal education was actually studying people with different perspectives. I studied at the University of Georgia and their philosophy department, and studied history of religions under a former Buddhist monk who is probably still a Buddhist, Shantaratnayaka. And then I would study at a conservative Bible school. I studied Greek for 3.5 years, Hebrew for a couple of years, so that I could get at the background and understand things when I'm talking about religion. Jesus' teaching on it was, in his Sermon on the Mount, he said, seek and ye shall find. And in the original Greek, that word for seek is in a tense that means seek and keep on seeking. I mean, you look at Solomon back in the Old Testament, and this guy was just a sponge for wisdom and knowledge. And today, what people seem to want to do is to go to some site that agrees with what they agree with and come and get a few quotes and use them to attack someone else. But seeking takes time. And a lot of the things in my book, you can look at and you can just dismiss them outright at first thought. But if you go on your back deck, light up a philosophical pipe and just smoke on this thing a little while, you have to think about it. You have to say, okay, what if this is true? It's something that you can't have quick and easy like fast food. And you know this with research. There's nuance to facts. There are certain things that are just very clear and you look at, and some people like to be dogmatic about everything, but there's another side. And to be open to that is extremely difficult. And I'm sorry, but it takes, I mean, if you looking at this, I don't know if you can see, I've got my house has thousands of books in it. Some of these books back on this shelf are near-death experience books. I probably had to read thousands of pages to try to get at this evidence. I just don't see people willing to really seek. People want to be comfortable with their opinions. If they're a Republican, they'll listen to Rush Limbaugh and believe everything he says. If they're a Democrat, they've got their own sources and they believe what they say. But listen, we've got to come with an open mind because these issues are important. They involve a whole eternity and not just time. Doesn't that deserve our research?
It does. And it's like I tell people, if you get to a debate and it's just an impasse because someone's really closed-minded, I said, just remember one thing. When you get over there and it's all black, look for a little bit of light. Look, just remember, I'm telling you this now, look for that little speck of light and follow it. It's an advice that you might really take advantage of. Hey, final question for you, Steve. You mentioned a little bit ago this culture war thing that we are in the middle of. You mentioned it, I mentioned it, and that's that, you know, we live in this kind of schizophrenic culture where we embrace sometimes spirituality, religion. We do not elect people unless they have this claim of faith, even though we seriously doubt that, for example, Mr. Obama, President Obama, is, as he claims, a, you know, devout follower and a really religious guy, as he had to claim when he was, you know, being elected. Then we, let's say, gee, do we really think that's true? Or George Bush, you know, who was really pandering to the Christians. And now, you know, does he really go to church anymore? I mean, there's a lot of evidence that the guy never goes to church anymore. He did it as a political necessity. So we live in a culture where that is a reality, but we also live in a culture that is really atheistic. I mean, when we really look at it, science is certainly atheistic. Our news media, for the most part, is definitely has this atheistic bent on it. So you come along and you see this need, and I see this need for digging into the data, using the data to kind of bootstrap us into a new paradigm. Come on, is that really going to happen?
It may happen to one or a few people. You know, we don't know the I'm convinced. I've written some on personal finance, on investing, and all these great economists from the California universities and places where the government takes its data from, when they're trying to predict the economy, the one thing we know is they may be right about where we are right now, but they're consistently wrong when predicting a year or 2 years out. We don't know where this culture's going. We really don't. A good book on this might be The Twilight of Atheism by Alistair McGrath. He goes back and looks at the history of thought, you know, with the French Revolution and all these different times when people were against religion. And so they kind of threw it all out and said, you know, we'd be much better off without it. Let's start out on an atheistic foundation. Well, the 1900s were an experiment in that. And we had the Russian Revolution, and it was a disaster. You know, all these atheist states that came up. Well, then after that, many people from Russia were very open to religion because they had that background. Well, right now we're going through a time where because of 9/11, because of people are saying religion can be dangerous. So there's a feeling in the air that, oh, we become open to people saying all religion is crazy. But we have to be careful because these cultural things, even in academia, philosophy in the 1900s was very, very secular. But now it's coming around a turning point. So I see ourselves intellectually as being at a real turning point. In philosophy, we're kind of past all the language clarification, where we just kind of discussed God out of existence. We're past that. There's vigorous debate in theism and many strong theists that are philosophers at this point. In cosmology, look at where we are. 100 years ago, everybody was saying the universe had always been. Therefore, these things could have come about with an infinite amount of time. Anything could happen. Now they're saying it had a beginning. Well, that has implications, but I don't think we've thought through these implications objectively enough to see where we are. But when we have things like people because of religious motivations bombing us, I think that makes our culture very open to people who come in and say, hey, just look at all this religion. It's just a farce. And we have to be careful because we went through that once in the 1900s. And it was a disaster. Millions and millions and millions of people killed under atheist states. And the one thing that these people agreed on who were leading these states is that nobody's watching us from outside. Near-death experiences say, hey, wait a minute. There's evidence that somebody is looking over you and that you're going to be accountable for that. And I think this is a great turn, but the lines are divided. People who see atheism and naturalism can seem to only see this. The theists see their perspective. We need to read each other. We need to think because these are deep issues. They're important issues. And we need to have these discussions. Thanks for having it with me, Alex.
Thank you, Steve. Again, the book, folks, is Near-Death Experiences as Evidence for the Existence of God in Heaven. A Brief Introduction, Plain Language. Steve, I should mention the book is also very affordable. As a matter of fact, if you have a Kindle, you can borrow it for free. At least I saw that offer available on Amazon, or you can download it for a very reasonable price. Wish you the best of luck with it, and thanks again so much for joining me today on Skeptico.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Steve Miller for joining me today on Skeptico. Do check out his excellent book. He really has a lot of good information in there about near-death experience research. And as he points out, I think oftentimes on this show, we make the assumption that everyone knows that there is this good solid, scholarly, peer-reviewed research behind this near-death experience. And that's an assumption that we need to flesh out and let people know that that really is the case. And books like Steve's allow people to jump into that research and get their arms around it. So one question that I would tee up from this interview, and it is the question that I focused, I think, most of my energy on, and that is, does the near-death experience phenomena, as we know it from the research, contradict Christian doctrine? Would love to hear your opinion on that. Would love to hear you weigh in on that question. The place to do it is either on the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com, where you can leave a comment directly there, or you can click and jump over to our popular forum, where you'll find plenty of other folks who would love to engage in a dialogue with you on this topic. While you're at the Skeptico website, be sure to check out all our past shows. There's quite a collection there on a variety of topics that you might find interesting. And you can also connect with me directly there by dropping me an email or connecting with me through Facebook. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Skeptico. Working on a number of different projects and shows coming up. I hope you'll stay with me for all of that. But until then, take care and bye for now.